Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 8 of Our Voices, Our Community. Each week, we focus on issues that are important to you and our community. We discuss social, political, and economic issues, but also arts and culture and much more. Our goal is to merge local with state and national issues that affect our lives in Roanoke, the New River Valley, and Southwest Virginia. Today, we are joined by Will Solari, Catherine Strongberg, and our guest for today is Ryan Bell. Hello, everyone.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. It is good morning. Before we started, I was complaining about not having my cup of coffee. We're recording early, but that's okay. I can push this through with you guys' assistance. Thank you. Today, our focus will be on the lessons we learn and the lessons we teach. We're going to talk about sentencing and is it fair, instilling and communing and continuing trauma when it comes to perpetuating negative symbols. And then we're going to talk about the pulse of our great city of Roanoke. We're going to talk about disparity and justice, as the recent news have been talking about. We've been talking about Felicity Huffman. You guys know Felicity Huffman, right? Are you familiar?
So I'm all these white ladies look the same to me. I confused her with another actress.
See, we start in our morning like this.
She had her coffee. She's ready.
I'm bad with celebrities. No, all celebrities look alike to me. Like, I don't know. There's something about them. They always have some face double that I think one's somebody else. So,
well, I believe she was on Desperate Housewives. It's not a show that I watched, but I'm pretty sure it was a very popular show back in the 90s or 2000s. Okay, I'm giving my age a little bit on this.
I mean, is it possible that she was preparing for that role of being a desperate housewife by paying for her kids?
Well, she seemed very desperate because just recently she received 14 days in jail plus a fine for her role in the recent college admissions scandal. You're aware that I guess they paid an individual for regarding testing and their testing purposes, and I think it was $15,000. I believe it was $15,000 to $20,000 that they paid to make sure they're testing, and I think it was part of a rowing team as well for a rowing scholarship. And she had had a picture of her in her rowing gear and never rowed anything in her life. But that was the sentence that she received for trying to help her child get into college. So is that fair? I guess the issue, Tanya McDowell. It was an African-American homeless woman. She was sentenced to 5 years for sending her child to elementary school in Norwalk, Connecticut, while residing in Bridgeport. So I guess the question is, how is it that the Felicity Huffman, Academy Award-winning actress, get 14 days, and Tanya McDowell, a homeless African-American woman, receive 5 years pretty much for practically the same thing?
Well, it's always been a race and class issue, right? I mean, if you look historically at even prior to this, you know, kind of most recent thing where everything kind of came to light, I mean, it's not like George W. Bush got into Yale because of his SAT scores. You know what I mean? And there's always been this sort of like history of whether it's pay for play, it's getting out of the draft or whatever. If you're rich and or connected, you have access to those things. And if anyone else tries to use the tricks that you use, they're gonna make definitely sure you get punished for it. Because I mean, in my mind, that's how you keep people in power. That's how you keep, you know, the upper class firmly cemented in those positions, in those schools, and in those positions of power.
Yeah, I agree 100%. First thing I want to say is I would never pay $15,000 for my child to do rowboat and anything, first and foremost. But I completely agree that it's a race and class issue. You know, it just further solidifies the fact that these systems and these institutions were never built, designed, or meant to work for people who fall within a certain socioeconomic class, people who fall within a certain racial class. It was never meant or designed to work for them. So, like you said, once we start to try to use those same tricks, you know, let me register you underneath your grandmother's address because your grandmother, who was able to build some sort of generational life and lives in a decent school district, let me register you underneath your grandma's address. As a black mother, if you get caught, you get a couple of years in jail, right? Versus if I'm a rich white family and I want to pay $15,000 to cheat on your SATs or to fabricate the fact that you were on a rowboating team or whatever the case may be, this was designed for you to take advantage of it. So while we can't flat out just not punish you at all, we'll do something that's even worse. We'll give you a little slap on the wrist so that we can show everybody. I think the 14 days in jail was a clear sign, right? A clear sign to everybody that, hey, yes, she got caught, but guess what? We don't care. This was meant for her. So we'll give her a little something, but we're letting you know that this was designed for her to be able to take advantage of, and that's why she only gets 14 days. Mm.
Well, I have a fun story. My college roommate, who lived in Roanoke for a couple of years, she was born in Germany, actually, and they moved to the States when she was like 11. They moved to Tennessee, and then they lived in Roanoke for, I think, only 2 years, maybe three. But she graduated from high school here, and then she applied to college. Of course, she applied to the College of William & Mary, where I went to college, in-state, right? Well, her parents shortly moved to Indiana for her dad to work as a vice president for GE. But that entire time, she just transferred her address over to a friend's in Roanoke. And lo and behold, they just kept that in-state tuition the whole time.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, people do, I mean, white people do this stuff all the time, right? And I think the answer is that when you get caught doing something, you know, my friend's parents were happy to take the risk of getting caught because they knew full well that they could afford an excellent defense attorney, right? So I think that's the question. Can you afford a defense attorney or not? And if you can't afford a defense attorney, the answer is 14 days. If you can't, the answer is 5 years. Because I guarantee you that lady could not afford a like high-powered defense attorney.
Right
at all. And the next question that we got to get into is, especially for the lady who got the years in jail for transferring her kids to another school in the district. The bigger question is, why does she even feel like she has to use a separate address to send her kid to another school in the district? And then around college, the only time that people of color or lower socioeconomic class that you can get away with lying about something that you did in order to get into a better university is if you play football, basketball, if you play some type of sport, and you're going to go to that university and make that university millions of dollars based off of your athletic skill, then we'll let you lie about your scores or what your grades were or different things of that nature. So, right. Again, it's all tied to, you know, furthering that particular agenda.
Who's getting paid?
Well, yeah, and you see a lot of that play out in just, again, just the general failings in the education system. And I think it's a broad problem because the people who can do something about it, say politicians, for example, to affect real change within an education system, within a public education system, especially, it takes a long time. And that's not hot topic enough. That doesn't get enough votes. And especially if you're looking to get reelected every 2 years, every 4 years, and you're like, listen, we're going to have this great plan. It's going to take 6 years. And everyone's like, no, don't even bother with that because it's not going to help with you get money for your election. And it's not going to help you get reelected. And so, I mean, it starts there, but I think exactly like you were saying, Ryan, it filters into every aspect of it from who we allow to do things. And I think especially when it gets to sports, you run into that very odd public-private overlap where private schools can get away with a lot of crap. And again, it just gets right back to the money being a problem with the system, the legislation, and even the kind of consequences of messing with it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep following. Oh, I'm sorry,
well,
Catherine.
So ahead. The last thing I want to say is, you know, this woman in Connecticut got convicted of a criminal conspiracy to steal money for enrolling her children in public school. Now, I just want to point out that you know, the idea of zoning so that you can have a school district where all the houses are essentially unaffordable for a certain person below a certain class, and then setting the district lines and then keeping certain people out of it. If that's not a conspiracy, I don't know what is, right? Like, you know, what we call a quote unquote conspiracy versus what we decide, oh, we decided that, you know, by, you know, oh, we had connections to people in power. Like, the difference between what is a conspiracy and what is just something that we got done via our powerful connections is all about, you know, how much money do you have? So, you know, the people in Connecticut specifically had a conspiracy set up to keep her out.
Right. Right.
Wow. Right. Well, again, we'll follow this up. Again, I think that another actress is being charged as well. You remember the other actress?
I mean, is Aunt Becky from Full House?
Yeah, is that? I think that is Aunt Becky.
She got in trouble.
There you go.
In my mind, like, that's another, like, ridiculous overlap, because I'm like, oh, she paid for the twins to get into whatever. But that's really all I know. That's as far as I know. And it's mostly just like the fiction in my brain making that part up.
Well, I'm going to assume that she's probably going to receive the same sentence. Unless there's further,
you mean more, slap on the wrist?
Basically a slap on the wrist on this. I think it's appalling, especially when you think about a homeless mother who's trying to do the best for her children, trying to give them the best education, that they're going to give them 5 years because she's trying to help her children. It's a darn shame. Excuse me, I don't want to use explicitives in our podcast, but it is a shame that that the judicial system is not looking at this a little bit more fairly on this, because I just can't believe that you can actually be charged for something trying to help your child, and you're not even paying for it. You're just trying to help the interests of your children.
Well, and I'm not sure that this is by design or by a happy accident on the part of, again, the people who cling to that power, who cling to that level of wealth and prestige that comes with Yale. Because what is Yale if anyone can get into it? What is Harvard if the best and brightest can get into it, not just the most elite people? And I think that what that, if we want to talk about trickle down effects, that becomes an all-out war on public education. So you don't want people going to better schools that are poor. You don't want people advancing to these positions of power that could necessarily change this pre-existing structure. And again, I think if you go back and you look at some of the education policies that came into effect during George W. Bush's reign of terror, like, it's just an all-out war on critical thinking. The way that testing in schools changed, the way that the abilities to people to teach to their strengths, budget cuts and all that kind of stuff within public education, it almost seems like it's by design. And then, you know, you end up, and here's our awesome segue, with guys carrying tons of tiki torches on, you guessed it, a place of education and a place that's trying to better itself. So I think that, like, you know, whether it's this kind of jail sentence or people marching on Charlottesville, you end up seeing this kind of systemic problems with lack of critical thinking and lack of education globally.
Well, yeah, I agree. And well, thank you for a nice transition, Will, because now we're going to be talking about the issues at Charlottesville.
I'm just really amped to talk about these guys who got sentences. Yeah. So I'm sorry I jumped the gun on that one.
That's all right, man. That's okay. I like a good transition. Charlottesville, we're talking about the Confederate monuments and the trauma that's been happening. And also we're going to be talking about some of the recent NAACP recently sued the school system in Hanover, Virginia as well, regarding changing the Confederate names and so forth. But in Charlottesville, the Confederate statues will actually remain in Charlottesville, according to Circuit Court Judge Richard Moore. He ruled last week that the law's intent was historic preservation and not discrimination. He issued a permanent injunction preventing the removal. Permanent. So it means We can't move.
Right.
And he, so now we'll have, I think there were statues of Robert E. Lee as well as one of the, it was one of the issues of trying to remove, and also the monument of Stonewall Jackson, both of them Confederate generals, symbol of the Confederacy, and a lot of communities and different communities view it different ways. For me, I think it's a view of terrorism and racism being an African-American male. Others view it differently. So what are your thoughts now that is a permanent injunction? So they're going to keep their statues.
No, I mean, I think you can call it like it is, you know. If you're going to have, I think you can create, if there's legislation in place to keep things there, or laws in place, I think you can create legislation around that. I mean, in Texas recently, you know, Texas has some horrible, prohibitive healthcare laws in regards to abortion and everything like that. And so the city council in Austin recently created grants and support for people who are looking for that kind of care and that kind of help, any kind of reproductive help. So they created laws around laws. And I think you could do the same thing with Charlottesville. And I think you could, you know, you could cut back the budget on maintaining those monuments indefinitely. You could create a grant to build a larger statue of a Union soldier right beside it that says winner over top of it and loser over top of the Confederate ones. I mean, I think there's a number of ways you could get around this, even if you have to keep the statue. But I mean, I think, again, it goes back to that fundamental lack of critical thinking about these things. I mean, it's not like, people talk about Nazi Germany being like excellent tacticians when they started the war, but no one wants a bunch of statues of losers around their country, especially if they created such a problematic history. We were like the only country on earth that celebrates, you know, that kind of brutality and that. And just, I mean, just frankly, people who lost a war. Whether they were American or not, they were going to war against the United States that we live in now. And so I have no idea why these things even still exist.
Now, even in Germany, they have laws prohibiting the swastika.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Can I say it? I can't. It's a swastika.
There you go. Got it.
I don't even want to say that word. But it's laws against that. And yet, like you said, Will, in the United States, I mean, we had a war, basically it was acts of treason in a lot of ways, and we still celebrating this by putting up monuments and
well,
so forth.
There are those who say that, you know, the war ended, but the war continued, right? That the Reconstruction period was a insurgency period where the insurgency were the, you know, white Confederate, you know, land owning, previously, you know, enslaving people, you know, those forces and the people who were working for them, that those forces were able to win the insurgency. And that's what, you know, the lynchings and everything else was a continuation of a form of war, and it was successful. So, you know, that's why the monuments are up, because guess what? The North actually lost. You know, like, that's a dark way of looking at things, but that's how some historians definitely cast this. That, and then the Civil Rights period was when the North, or, you know, you would say like the North, I mean, it's not really like, obviously Civil Rights is not the movement doesn't come out of the North, but you know, that's when the conflict was resolved in the other direction.
Do you think the atmosphere that is currently going on in our country, you think this ruling would have been different if he was in a different other era, presidential era, example, the Obama era? Do you actually think that would have passed?
It's hard to say, because I feel like a lot of this current wave of white nationalism is in part in response to having our first black president, but also being empowered by someone who caters and has no problem relying on the support and empowering white nationalist. So in some ways it may not have happened, but you know, I think there's that thing where, you know, it's not a two-way street. You know, someone like Obama would go, listen, I don't agree with the Confederacy or whatever else, but I believe in the First Amendment. And you know what? If that makes you guys feel happy, I don't mind, you know, letting you guys do what you do and just don't kill anybody. But then the kind of paradigm shifts, right? You go from people being cool to people being all up in arms about nonsense, and they're becoming more organized on the internet. And then again, you have all these awful politicians. I mean, one of them just ran for governor in Virginia, creating every dog whistle possible to white nationalists and white supremacists, you know, giving credence to like their really awful ideas and policies. And just going, yeah, I mean, as long as I have you guys vote, yeah, let's keep up your racist statues. And again, the statues, like Catherine was saying, they didn't show up right after the Civil War to be like, well, it was hard fought, but I guess in the end, we're all Americans. They showed up around the time of the Jim Crow era, around civil rights, just to like, just a giant, you know, racist middle finger to anyone who thinks they could have equal rights to white Americans. And so that kind of history, I don't know. It goes so much further than saying it's just a presidential era or you know, a recent thing.
Okay, right.
So the Confederate statues and the namings of schools and stuff has always been a topic that has torn at my heart and my mind. It's mainly because, so when I look at this, right, I absolutely think, when you talked about thinking critically, Will, around certain individuals, how we vote, right, how we vote in the office, who make these particular decisions, right? But my grandmother had a saying, and I think this applies to the namings of schools and the Confederate statues being up and being put out, especially for black folks. I think that a lot of times, it's interesting to me that the NAACP is suing to have this name changed, right? And I think, and I'm not saying that the name of the school shouldn't be changed. Absolutely, I think it should be changed. But I think as black folks and people of color, we have bigger issues than that school name being changed, right? I think that a lot of times we get caught up into, that's white folks' problems, mm-hmm. right? That's their argument. Mm-hmm. Y'all figure out what y'all want to do with these statues. We need to figure out why this black mother just got locked up for 5 years for trying to send her kid to a better school, right? We need to figure out why these gaps in pay and different things of that nature, right? Because half the black kids that probably go to that school, they don't know who the person name on the school is anyway. And if I called it the Robert Jeffrey School, or I called it the Karen Jones School, or I called it the Ryan Bell School, unless the curriculum in the school is being taught history about those people, they're not going to know who that new name is on that building anyway. Yeah. If I go over to John P. Fishwick right now, they probably don't know who John P. Fishwick is, even more than they knew who the name of the person was on the building in the first place. But the curriculum being taught in that school is still going to perpetuate the same cycle of poverty, of lower class, of all of those things over and over and over again. I think the curriculum fight, I think that fight is our fight. I think trying to get this statue taken down and wasting all that energy is not where we should be focusing our attention, right? I think it should be, like Will said, hey, let's get some stuff in place so we can go build a statue next to that one that's bigger, that says Winter. I think that's the best idea I've ever heard, right?
Yeah.
Because there's something, I tell you, there's just some things that aren't going to change, right? We can spend all this time, the NAACP can spend all these resources trying to get them statues taken down in Charlottesville, right? Or the NAACP can go into the Charlottesville school system and figure out what's going on in the Charlottesville school system and what's being taught in the Charlottesville school system, so that when you run into this particular statue, or you do learn what this particular name on your school building actually means, you have the correct history and context behind it, and you also have learned about the people who look like you, who represent you, who have fought this fight, who have shown some good characteristics and different things of that nature along the way.
Well, when you talk about naming things, I was super disappointed that the John P. Fishwick didn't end up as Henrietta Lacks, because I thought that would have been amazing, like, curriculum connection. But you're right. Like, if you're not going to put the curriculum connection in there, why bother naming a school after someone that you're not going to teach the kids about? You know, and I do totally agree with everything you just said about, you know, that if who put it up, you know, who put that statue up in the first place? And I love the idea of a giant neon sign, like neon as tacky as possible, with a great big like loop, you know, those old like where you can see it from space, like a looped arrow, and it, and then it says loser, and it just points down on that statue. That would be great. I think, you know, or some creative solutions. I mean, in North Carolina, they didn't wait for for official approval. Some statues just came down. And, you know, you might say, oh, you know, taking the law into your own hands is the wrong thing to do. But when it's effective and like the system's rigged, because who's the judge? Who's the judge? Who's making this decision? He is appointed by a Republican House of Delegates, a Republican, you know, gerrymandered majority. That's how that guy got his job. That's how you get to be a judge in Virginia, is that you get appointed by Republicans.
Well, I don't understand why you have to go through an act of Congress just to remove a physical, statue. I mean, right. I don't.
It's state government.
State government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they. I mean, it's a piece. If I had something on my lawn, and I might be making a stupid statement, but I see something on my lawn or property, state's property, and if I want to remove it, I'll remove it. I mean, you know, this fanfare, sure. and I understand that people are so riled up about the South will rise again and all this crap. But I just think it's like, I agree with you, Ryan. I mean, we're fighting over a lot of stuff that really if we don't have a basic understanding about our history, and some people see I have black people who walk up to statues and look at it, have no clue what it's about.
Who it is.
And then there's some white folks too.
Well, and maybe this is a, especially a question for you guys, because, you know, again, being white, I have the privilege and the advantage to get into the theoretical about this and go, well, is this an image of systemic racism? Is this a First Amendment thing? Is this, I can play all these different theoretical sides of it, which, you know, matter to me on a philosophical level, but don't affect me in the day to day as much as you guys, especially, again, just because walk around as a white guy, it's like, well, yeah, General Lee was white and Grant was white and all that, you know, it's a very different perspective. But do you think, though, that those statues, especially being in a public place with the kind of, you know, seal of approval from the state government or local government, I mean, I think that speaks also to systemic racism. You know, the reason you don't learn about black heroes the way you learn about Southern quote unquote heroes is because of the school system. But that's the same reason you have those statues in the first place. And that's the same reason those politicians won't get rid of them. I mean, is that, yeah. I mean, I think that they're both fights that
need to be had. I just think that we got to prioritize, especially as black folks, we have to prioritize which fight we check off the list first, right? Mm. So, to me, yes, the statue needs to go, or the naming, the certain name of a school needs to go, right? But the curriculum that's being taught, that's what needs to change first. Because a lot of times, like Robert just said, you know, I could take some kids up to a statue right now and they wouldn't have bit more clue who was that person on that statue in the first place, right? Because there's so many other things to think about. The analogy I give is with the recent, with California just passing the legislation that college athletes can earn off of their own likeness, right? Tim Tebow came on ESPN and talked about how when he was the most famous college athlete whose jersey was the highest selling, just ran off these things and how he never thought about being paid because it was simply for the love of the game for him. And so how other athletes, how he looks at it as you shouldn't worry about being paid, right? Tim Tebow, you have the privilege to be able to talk that way, right? We don't necessarily have the privilege to be focused on the statue being up right now, right? Not saying that that's not a piece of of the puzzle and what needs to be there, but there are a ton of other things, and I think that they enjoy us putting all this effort and attention into these statues while they can do everything else they want to do on the back end because we're focused on having these statues removed, right? While we're focused on having the name from the school building. Like, John P. Fishwick, the name changed, but let me go into the school and see what the SOL scores look like. So while we're focused on the name change, are the SOL scores improving? Are the 9 weeks improving? Are social, emotional situations with kids improving? Are we treating students with special needs better in the school? Are we doing all of these other things that that the community, that the NAACP, that all of these people should be focused on, which certain individuals do not want us to focus on, so they allow us to focus on, we got to get rid of this name change. How long can we drag this out? Because the name, the change in the John P. Fishwick should have been, like you said, it shouldn't have taken an act of Congress. It should have been an overnight decision.
Right.
But they dragged that out because of that.
And Will, to answer your question, also, you have to understand, too, and I'm glad you kind of raised that question to Ryan and myself. Being a black man, you have to understand, when you walk out the doors of your house, and being a black man, you are in constant, I wouldn't say warfare, I mean, but it's a constant issue of you have to fight. Whether you have to fight trying to have access to certain places or being welcome to certain places wherever you go, or when you do business with individuals who more than likely doesn't look like you, where you have to go to a job or environment where typically if you're a professional, you're usually the only person. It's a constant warfare every day when you wake up and go up and go to work. And, you know, I've been privileged to have the ability to work for myself, but there's others out there who work in an environment every day that they have to feel like they have to constantly fight. And I think when you have to go through all that, then talk about statues and talk about school changes and things like that. Usually people are kind of exhausted trying to fight the day-to-day issue of trying to survive. And if we kind of somehow eliminate those barriers, you'll see more people, especially more people in color, involved in more in politics and more involved in more civic activities. Because right now they're just trying to get out the door and survive the daily grind of it. So I agree. We need to remove all those things. But again, it's sometimes not a. It's not a huge fight, a list of priorities, especially for people of color.
Right. If your belly's not full and you don't have a safe place to live, you know, to lock the door and lay down and have a good rest at night, like, of course, you're not going to be able to be at every NAACP meeting or every. Yeah. I mean, they did drag that out, the renaming, all the renaming.
Or
all
even
those
be
things.
Welcome to come to a neighborhood and be welcome. Yeah. I mean, that's the simple issues of, you know, going out to a grocery store, going to a restaurant, a nice restaurant, and you have, and I'm not going to say, I mean, I go to restaurants. The service is somewhat good, but you can tell the body language. If you go to a particular restaurant, well, or Frankie Rollins, now they do have good service, but when you walk in there, you usually primarily one of the few people of color going in there. And so that is the atmosphere that and mindset you got to constantly fight on a daily basis. When you compete, you usually have to compete with not just the people of color, but you have to compete with white people as well. And so it's not an even playing because, okay, once I finish, have to fight and tussle with black folks, now I got to fuss and tussle with white folks.
Sure.
And this is just different levels that you have to fight. And sometimes it gets tiring. And so to talk about an issue about a statue, people will be like, I agree. But, you know, I mean, I gotta keep fighting this to keep food. And so I just kind of answer your question a little bit.
So do you think the politicizing of it then, I mean, and maybe this is, I mean, again, by design, the politicizing of those, keeping those statues is important of our, you know, our heritage and is just another, though I think it sometimes becomes a way to rally the wrong kinds of people against people of color.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement. It should be removed because if you are I guess what's the term, woke? if you're woke, you understand the history behind it. Yes, you're pissed. However, I don't know. It's just it. I think we should do it. I mean, you have allies who can help do it, but I think in the reality of things, there's so many other barriers to fight for. I don't know.
True.
Yeah, I don't know the value of it. And then also, we have to understand the society we are. We have to really, we just really need to come to terms, right, wrong, or indifferent, that this is a racist society in the United States, period. It's a racist society. We see different forms of racism throughout the history. And now we're at a point in our community where racism is rising. There's periods before when it was lowering. But at the end of the day, we are a racist society. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's something that we just need to come to terms and just understand it and how can we build and grow from it.
Sure.
And the changing of hearts and minds too, right? Because I had somebody ask me this question. And he just said flat out, he said, hey, look, they removed the statues, they changed the names, and the people who removed the statues and changed the names felt the way they did before they removed the statues and changed the names. And now they're mad because they feel that they've been forced to change the statues and remove the names, but they're still in power, right? Mm-hmm. So now what does that do? Because say this particular judge did not pass this permanent legislation. Say he removed them. Now we're championing this judge because he removed these statues, but say he removed them as a political move for himself, and he still feels the way that he feels inside, and now he supports or champions or a delegate or a senator, somebody writes some other type of legislation into place because we now put all this public support behind the changing of a name or changing of a statue. And to answer the original question, I do think due to the political climate, yes, it's easier to keep him around right now, right? But you know, I think that in any particular political climate, unless you have somebody who's willing to just come flat out and take a stand and say, hey, no, this got to go. And if I got to sign an executive order, I got to do whatever I got to do to be the person to overstep the judge's head and the city council's head and whoever else's head at my particular position. If I got to be that person to do it, then I'm going to just go ahead and do it. And then I think that way, yeah, it would happen. But you know, we live, it's like the whole gun situation, right?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I can say I don't support, you know, you being able to go out as a regular citizen and buy an AR-15, you know, fully automatic weapon. But at the same time, we have parts in our Constitution that say you should be able to do it,
so
right?
So, you know. I actually was thinking of the gun thing when you were talking about, like, it's almost like it's a distraction, right? Where it's like a conversation that it's like, okay, yeah, I agree. So it's like, okay, so in the gun conversation, what always happens is the gun folk, the gun extremists, the gun huggers, the gun lovers, they will say, oh, well, we got to arm teachers. And then everybody is marshaling all these arguments about why arm teachers.
Right.
And then in the meantime, they come in and they're like, oh, by the way, the compromise position now is to have more SROs,
right,
and to have less trained people. You know, instead of arming teachers, we're going to have one guy who comes in and gets, you know, and has all these, you know, like, we're going to put more armed dudes in our schools,
right,
who might be white supremacists or might be whatever. But, oh, we're not arming teachers, so this is a compromise. Right? No. Like, just never even talk about, right, like, just. I mean, I almost have a position of like, I don't even want to talk about that. Like, I don't even want to talk about arming teachers. Like, I don't even respond to that because that's crazy pants.
Right.
Like, so like, you know, I would just be like, you know what? I'm not going to respond to take the statues up or put the statues down. Like, the answer is obvious. Shut up.
I see what happens when we tape and we don't have our morning coffee. I see how we do. Well, good. Well, I we'll see what happens. Obviously, I see there'll probably be more fights to try to remove Confederate names and monuments, and I think we should be doing it. I mean, we should do mm-hmm. that. So we'll monitor that and we'll see what happens. So our remaining topic is we decided to kind of say, do kind of a, is that, what's the term, hodgepodge? Is that Am I saying that correct?
I don't know what hodgepodge is.
It's kind of more of a Caucasian term, I think.
But, sure.
Again, I haven't had my coffee this morning. I'm sorry. but we're going to kind of talk about a range of different subjects here and what's been going on, particularly about the city of Roanoke. There's been a lot of things that's been going on in the city regarding gun violence, recent school bus system, the school system, definitely regarding our beloved police chief, incidents regarding the higher school education. There's the Dumas Center. So we're kind of going to open up the mic for you guys to kind of talk about the state of Roanoke and some of the issues that's been happening and your thoughts about it.
You want to go ahead, Will?
No, go ahead, Ryan.
Start us off.
Go ahead. You're our guest today. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, like you said, I mean, there's been so many things that have been happening in the life of Roanoke, and not all bad either. I think there have been some great things that have been happening in the life of Roanoke, and I do from moving back to Roanoke as a young man 2 years ago. When I was 28 and 30 now, I definitely see the city moving in the direction at least of providing more opportunities to socialize and have fun and to just to kind of be a person in your social life in the city of Roanoke. So I definitely want to show some love and give some props to my city for that. But then we have the other side of Roanoke, where, you know, we talk about the gun violence, we talk about the situation with the Dumas or the higher ed building and the Oliver Hill Monument and certain things that go on in our schools. And, you know, I think that the pulse of the community of Roanoke has been a term that we use in woke, right, has been an awakening to a lot of these issues, which I find to be beautiful, right? I find to be beautiful that, and I see it cross-generational too. You know, I can, this has been the first time in a long time that I've been able to go have conversations with my 86 or 7, maybe 88-year-old grandmother, right? I think he's 88-year-old grandmother, about issues that are happening in the city of Roanoke, right? Like the Dumas is a hot button for her, right? Because she grew up on the yard. She grew up on Henry Street. You know, that's a hot topic, a hot button for her, right? Mm-hmm. Or I could go talk to the mother or the father who has lost a son due to gun violence, right? So it's bringing a lot of different people, a lot of different sectors of people around the city of Roanoke together. You know, the bus situation, right? The bus situation has affected a bunch of people across the city of Roanoke, right? So it's bringing everybody together to have these certain conversations. And I think that we're now moving to a place, at least in some regard, of ownership of these things, even if it's to a small degree, right? I'll take the bus situation, for example. I think that our deputy superintendent, Dr. Lyons, when he came out and said that there were some errors and that we're owning those particular errors, right? I think that was the right thing to do. Now, I do think that what we do a lot of times, though, is that statement came too far into the problem, right? That should have been the first day that situation happened. Hey, we messed up. We made some errors, and we're looking to correct those things now, right? Same thing with, like, the gun violence task force in the city of Roanoke, right? You know, it's great that it's happening. It should have happened, right? And so now we have to put some things in place to have some immediate kind of wins to show people that we're doing work, right? But so I think the pulse of Roanoke is kind of an awakening of sorts. As we were talking about earlier, Will brought up the city council meeting and how that kind of got a little rowdy and got out of hand, right? But I think that's a good thing, right? Every now and then,
passion.
You gotta have that passion.
So, right? If people don't care about their city, that's the worst, yes. Right? If people don't care enough to get emotional about their city, You know, you're that's when you're really hurting, right? When you're just letting, you know, the bloodless lawyer sort of chop you up for change or whatever they're getting out of it. You know, those are the most depressing city council meetings in a way, actually, when they just, you know, some lawyer goes up there that's been paid by some bigwig to get some zoning change and it just kind of plods on through and you think, like, what really happened here? I have no idea.
You know, with the I see a lot of our problems. You know, like we've talked about this before with the police chief. You know, they're growing pangs of a new city.
Excuse me, I need to interrupt. I beloved
our beloved man.
Beloved
our beloved
chief. Thank you very much.
And you know, these things happen, but I think we're at this kind of pivotal crossroads with the city where we can keep defaulting on best intentions. Like with the buses, it's like, well, maybe it'll sort itself out. We'll give it a few days. And no one is entirely as proactive about things as I think the community wants them to be. And, you know, that's across the board. It's not just the police chief. It's not just the bus system. It's not just education here. It's not just development. And it's hard to know what the solution to that is, because I do think there's a lot of good people in place who are trying hard. Whether it's not having the time because we don't afford our city council members enough of a paycheck to make that their job, or if it's just, again, the sort of defaulting to best intentions and maybe it'll sort itself out. I think the strive to want more and to ask for more creative solutions, to ask for a more progressive city, I think is a solid one. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping what we can do then is reflect on things like with Deschutes or like anything. I mean, any things we've ever talked about in the show, and go, well, you know, it seems like a good idea. And the easy thing to do is just match this grant for this company that wants to like move into one of the old Norfolk Southern buildings. But the reality is, we're giving $250,000 to a debt collection agency that's kind of predatory. And while they're making money, and I guess while technically those are jobs in Roanoke, do they really need that money? And is that going to be sustained growth? Is that going to be the kind of thing that reflects well on our city, or that looks good about the way we spend money, the way we do things? And again, I think it's just easier to go, well, best intentions, they're a company and we'll hope for the best. But I think we can always do more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I think... as I look at Roanoke, I grew up here as well, and I went away and I came back decades later, and I do see a lot of change. I do see the fact that we have moved forward in a progressive environment. I'm still not sold on thinking that we're a progressive city. But we're leaning toward that. And so I'm glad about that. I'm also realizing there are going to be changes not only in on council, but also internally in the operations part of our city government as well. I believe there will be some recent retirements coming up in our city management. And so that's going to be coming up. And yeah, that's going to be happening. Yeah. And so that's going to be a change there. The police chief as well. I beloved police chief. He is retiring, walking into the sunset, and I wish him a well-traveled retirement. And I think we need to find someone that is more more related to the community. I am a strong believer of community policing. I don't understand why we can't have our police in the communities, not just Northwest, but all communities where the police officers can have the ability to build relationships with our citizens. I don't understand why that's it's a hard deal. But you know, maybe I'm just ignorant and I just don't know better.
Wow.
But I just think that's important. I think the economic development that's going to be currently going on, especially with Evans Springs, I'm still trying to understand why some of the questions that citizens asked have not received answers for. And so that makes me very suspicious why we can't get answers to that. And so if they're going to build something so huge that's going to affect a population who typically are not are not going to be at a financial means to kind of handle the overall development of the project. I mean, I kind of question that too. So overall, I mean, I love my city. I think it's a great young city. It still have a small town feel.
Sure does.
You know, everybody
for
knows
good or bad.
Yeah, good or bad, everybody knows your business. Right. So, and so, but no, I think we're leaning in a good direction. The council is good. We have a good council, and I hope they can continue in the direction that we're looking for, everyone that we're looking forward to. I just don't want us to go backwards. And I just don't want going into 2020, the economy one of the reasons to kind of pull things back.
I mean, I think that, you know, we've somewhat insulated ourselves. I think the Medicaid expansion really helped, you know, with so many healthcare jobs. You know, we're seeing in Tennessee, you know, we're hearing stories about the, I don't know if any of y'all have heard the story about Ballard Health. So I've just recently been hearing about this and finding out about this on the Twitters, and so the Twitter machine told me about it, little birdie, that they're having basically cutting back on services, cutting back on doctors, and then that's the number one employer in that community, you know, in East Tennessee, and far southwestern Virginia, this Ballard Health facility there. And apparently Virginia did contribute a little bit to that because they gave them some sort of, like, Terry Kilgore is a delegate here and gave them some sort of authorization. But I think luckily here in Roanoke, you know, we got a lot of healthcare jobs, but we're a little bit cushion from the, like, some bad economic winds by the fact that we have that Medicaid expansion. Of course, you know, if the state budget gets hit, like, you know, everything, right, then we get hit with the education, you know, all these education shortages again. And then it's, oh, you know, we can't afford this and we can't afford that. And we can't afford all the good things that we made over the years. And, you know, we can't even afford to fill in the potholes that were created by the last, you know, recession in our education system. So I'm absolutely worried about that locally. You know, that teachers do get their raises and that all that does happen. It's not just for 1 year, but they really need them for, you know, a number of years to make up for all the deficit from previous. One other thing that I see as really important in terms of the community policing that you talked about and what kind of police chief we hire. So I just remember this crazy story that my neighbor told me about Chris Perkins. So Chris Perkins definitely has some of his detractors. I'm not trying to say he's a saint, but this guy told me, he was like, you know, I remember, he's like, some of my cousins would tell me about how Chris Perkins, when he first started out, he was a bike cop in Northwest. He would roll around on his bike in Northwest. And he's like, a lot of guys remember that and they respected that. Like, he looked like an idiot out there and he knew it. And like, he knew that he looked at vulnerable, but that vulnerability also connected. He was like, I'm out here, you know, you can reach over and push me if you want to, you know, I'd fall right off this bike. But there he is out on his bike looking somewhat ridiculous in the cop bike shorts. And but also building up goodwill of, hey, I'm willing to bike around this community, not just like sit in my cop car. So, you know, I hope we can ask some real questions about what does community policing mean? Does it mean like sitting in my cop car, eating, you know, doing the stereotypical cop car things? Getting out on your bike cop and you know, being willing to really be in the community.
I agree. I mean, we really do need to define that. I just think it's just being engaged is, you know, for me, I think it's about being engaged with a police chief. And I don't know the process. I think he's leaving in what?
February.
I mean, that's soon. I don't know. Of course, I'm not privy to what their thought processes are, but I do strongly believe in at least have some kind of community advisory or something to the effect to help in the selection of the police chief, at least be part of the interview process of it. I think that needs to be in place at the very least.
Well, I think it'd be fun and just good at some point if any of our friends on council or the city wanted to come on the show and talk too. I think
let's invite some of our council members too.
So like, you know, like a lot of these questions we kind of guess at them and we kind of go, okay, like we think we know what they're thinking and everything, but please, anyone who is listening who wants to come on the show, please come on the show.
Well, the question is,
if they can also.
Well, can if they can.
They
and,
can.
And will they answer? I mean, that you know, it is, you know.
Sure.
We hope for, I'd rather you just not answer than lie to me.
Well, but, you know, and then to put these things together, though, too, since we're sort of getting meta and talking about the show on the show. We're a pretty left-leaning show. We're pretty progressive in our values and whatever else. But I think, again, when it comes to Roanoke, if we look and if we take aside all of our kind of our vested interest in a more progressive society, if you look at models comparable to Roanoke, just economically speaking, growth, sustainability, all that kind of stuff, you know, even removing our bias, Roanoke has the opportunity right now to be Asheville, Portland, Austin, or we could be going the other direction, you know, like Kansas or Detroit or Danville. I mean, you look at these places that have similar industries to ours and the ways they were able to change and do things. And I think we are at that crossroads.
Yeah.
I agree. And I think that, again, aside from our kind of left-leaning values, you know, those things work. You know, the kind of things that I think we're often advocating for on the show are the only sustainable things to having an economy that thrives and continues to grow and continues to be, and especially grow in a positive and a sustainable way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think creativity is going to be one of the key indicators on how we're going to maintain and even grow our city. I mean, you know, just doing the standard things based on what has been done before or what we think it's going to do before, I think we're going to have to be very creative. I think you have to be very nimble because we're going to have a lot of other external issues and factors come into play that's going to really hinder our city. And we just got to have creative solutions to do it. And that's the only thing I worry about. Do we have creative leaders in place to help solve these issues? And that's the only question I have. That's the only thing. Other than that, I think we're doing a great job. But as we move forward,
creativity requires bravery.
Well, that is true.
So do we have brave and creative officials?
Well, see, now I'm not going to answer this question.
I'm going to leave it unanswered, too.
I'm not going to answer this right now. Maybe next episode. Well, all right. Anyone else want to talk about Roanoke? Yeah? No? Okay. I think we're done with Roanoke, huh? So, okay. Well, okay, guys. What are your thoughts about next week? What are you thinking about as we move forward in this week? Any interests or any events or any notions that you're thinking about as we move forward into next week?
I have to admit something. Since we're talking about creative people, I failed to mention this really. The winner-loser thing, that was thought of by the great Brian Stephen King, like one of Roanoke's national treasures. So that meant just be a little missive, but the more we talked about it, I was like, oh, I got to give Brian credit. So I look forward to going to see It Part 2 with Brian. That's my...
It Part 2?
Yeah, that's my takeaway for this week.
Okay.
Seeing a horror movie with my buddy.
All right. What about you, Ryan? And thank you for coming on to the show. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me.
You brought some things to the table, man. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun.
Yeah.
This weekend and going into the next week, I don't have anything really too big coming up. I'm going to try to hit that Greek festival that they have. Heard the food is amazing.
I'm going to do that.
And then I'll be down in Lynchburg at the Jubilee Center in Lynchburg. They're having some sort of African-American heritage festival or something like that going on that my mother invited me to. So anytime my mother reaches out to me, you know, I think she needs some mother son time. So I'm gonna go feel that love language with her for the weekend. Maybe get a nice home cooked meal, and that's it for me.
Oh, okay. Catherine?
So I think I'm going to go try to check out. So there's some electric car thing going on Sunday, I think, and I'm going to go try to check that out. So I'm not sure where it's happening. I'll have to look that up, but something about electric cars and find out some more about maybe more sustainable way of life. So there you go.
Wow. Well, I am following, of course, the presidential lottery with and I think we just read Joe Biden is leading in Iowa in the polls.
No,
it's not. Am I wrong?
Elizabeth
Warren.
Elizabeth Warren leading in the polls. Okay, well, actually, I'm not following as much as I should then. Well, I am. Well, we'll see how it goes. I don't know. I like Elizabeth Warren. I do. I don't even know if I have any concerns about Elizabeth Warren. I like her. I don't know if she's gonna willing to take on Trump and win. And I don't know if Trump's gonna be just bad enough that Daffy Duck can come up and win. But
that's the scary thing is because you know we used to think that.
Yeah.
It used to be this person is entirely qualified. They have every check mark on what you need to be a successful politician.
And but we've learned qualifications
doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Doesn't mean not a damn
2016,
thing.
We set the woods on fire.
Yeah, we do. So I'm still following it. I was a little concerned about how Castro went after Joe Biden a little bit in the last debate. We're talking about his senility, basically. And that may be another subject, but I was concerned, even if you're part of, even though you're competing against each other and you're part of, and they're part of the same party, we don't need to get to that kind of level to move forward. I believe you can be competitive, but you don't need to step on and just, in my opinion, downright insult people just to move forward. I don't get that piece, but I guess that's love and war in politics, I guess.
And, you know, maybe we're trying to take a play from the Republican playbook, which is to say the more awful we make someone look, the more electable they seem.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't know, but we'll see.
Can we'll I put see one how more thing goes. Out there? Huh? One more quick thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
So Roanoke City Public Schools and Hurt Park, we're getting ready to launch a Lunch Buddy program at Hurt Park, which will be around the concept of trauma-informed care and resiliency. One of the resiliency protective factors is students or children being able to have a positive, connected relationship with at least one caring adult. And so we're going to launch a Lunch Buddy program to kind of help start to maybe build some resiliency in our students. So this is my recruitment pitch to everybody around this table right now. If you would like to be a Lunch Buddy with somebody at Hurt Park, and then anybody who may hear this podcast, if you would like to be a Lunch Buddy at Hurt Park, the commitment is only one day per week. It's about 30 minutes. You can pick whatever day you want to come up there that week, and it'll be the same time each day, each week that you pick. And you just come up, and the whole idea is to just come build a positive relationship with a student from Hurt Park, have lunch with them, talk to them, and just offer them that positive, caring adult in their life. So if you're interested, you can reach me at rabell@rcps.info.
Thank you, Ryan. And I think it was a Jonathan Rosser. He's the
He's over. Mr. Jeff Vargas is there now.
Yeah, he left.
Yeah,
with
Ross is over Addison.
That's right.
Ross is at
a lot of folks moving around.
Yeah. But I think that was a good move for him. I think it was. So, well, thank you for providing that information, Ryan.
Thank you.
Well, it's been a great discussion, and thank you for all of you for participating in today. And thank you for listening to Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors VA Magazine. You can also listen to us each Sunday at 3 p.m. on WROE 95.7, Radio Free Roanoke. If you like what you have heard today, leave us a review. Also, be sure to like Our Voices, Our Community on Facebook. Thank you and have a blessed day.